Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel this morning. It is the 27th of October, for those of you keeping score at home, and I'm sure you all are. It's a delight to have you here. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get to our conversation at hand. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
How'd you do?
I do fine. How you do? And Ray Graff is with us, a WAMC newsman.
Hello.
Extraordinaire.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thanks. And yourself?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Good. Good. Everybody's
very nice
good
to have you aboard.
Great.
Rosemary Armeo joins us. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany and a frequent panelist on this very program. And it's a thrill to have her. Good morning.
Thank you.
All right. Let me remind you that you can be a part of our conversation by going to roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we would love for you to weigh in, see what you have to say about the stuff that we're going to be talking about.
133 this morning.
What?
133.4 this morning.
That's how much you weighed?
Yeah.
I saw your column coming up. You gained 9 pounds during the fund drive.
I did.
It's like a 35% body mass increase.
Well, everything that was in the way, I just ate. I just, whatever was there, bagels and...
And he's lost it again already?
He gained nine
pounds.
Oh,
I've been very strong on this, on my program.
God, I hate talking about Alan's weight. It just makes me feel fat.
So you lost how much?
Well, I was up to 140, actually.
Oh, wow. So what a swine, eh? Wow, amazing.
Better known as my thigh.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Just checking the list. Was that on the story?
Yeah.
I know. We're off the rails.
I don't know.
Even begun.
That's great.
When you said 135, I thought, oh, is that like electoral votes? Is that like
no.
how many
yeah,
we, you so know, is there somebody, we, you know.
135
is IQ.
What?
Give or take 40 or 50. You're good to go.
Okay,
all right.
I'm going.
It's
going to
be that
food.
Kind of pro.
I got to buy cat food.
Yeah. Okay. A growing number of prominent Republican women are worried that as members of their male-dominated party step up to defend Donald Trump against accusations of sexual assault, they are causing irreparable damage to the GOP's deteriorating relationship with female voters. I ask this question somewhat facetiously, although not really. Okay, so how is this new?
Jeez, I know. Astute women, huh? They finally caught on to what's happening. I mean, we've been talking about a war against women by Republicans during the last campaign, much less now. First, it was a congressman who thought, you know, rape was something highly overblown by women, and now we have this massive assault against women by a misogynistic candidate who has a sex predator problem.
Alleged.
So, yeah, alleged, right, by 11 people. So, yeah, they ought to be worried about this. And it isn't just his women's problem. It's his bigoted views on religion and race as well.
This story seems to come out of the Megyn Kelly, Newt Gingrich.
Wasn't that a charming display?
You know, we talked about it yesterday, and I'll admit, at that point when we discussed it, I had only seen maybe a minute and 30 clip. Watching the whole thing, the entire 9 minutes and 40 seconds, was very disturbing.
You're an expert interviewer. I wanted to hear what you thought of that exchange.
Well, she was amazing. I thought she was amazing.
In a good sense.
Absolutely. I thought she held him accountable. You could tell she was irked. You could tell that she didn't want to be questioned, and I think the one thing that would be put into, you know, which is sort of the issue is when he came back on her, and she said, "Okay, well, this isn't my place to take a position on this, but it is my position to take a place on the predatory acts against women," and which. She has every right to do, in my mind, and I thought it humanized it, and it made it very strong, but it was uncomfortable to watch.
Very uncomfortable to watch. Yeah, it's an older white man poking his finger in her face. You could see it on television. You know, I'm doing this. I'm poking my finger at the microphone now, which no one can see, of course. It was intimidating. It was really amazing. I don't think that if I were in her position, I would have kept my cool in the same way. She was never impolite to him. She didn't call him any names. She didn't swear. And I'm amazed by the reaction, which seems to depend on whether you're a Trump supporter or a Clinton supporter.
She did say, you know, I hope you get your anger issues under control.
Yeah. That was a nice dig at
it. Was
end.
A nice shot, I thought. Yeah. Certainly got her point across.
I did appreciate that also.
Yeah, fun at the home.
But I'm a Clinton supporter, and so I thought Megyn Kelly won.
Yeah.
Well, my friends who are for Trump said, "Oh, good for Newt. Wow, we really got her, put her in her place. Damn media."
And not only that, but Trump has gone out mm-hmm. and said, "Congratulations, you did a wonderful job."
Well, to Newt, he said that.
What'd yes. you say?
To Newt, he said that.
Yeah, but he did it publicly right. so that it was on all the airways this morning.
So, and that's the question. So how do you then, you know you have a problem with I've heard this 3 billion times, but I'll say it anyway, which is, you know you have problems with with women in the suburbs of Philadelphia and elsewhere. So why do you, in the last days of the campaign, pick this fight? Why does a surrogate of Donald Trump in these waning days of the campaign pick this fight?
I'd like a turn, if I can.
Yes. And Ray wants a turn, too.
No.
We'll go in alphabetical order.
No, I think you do because you were totally frustrated. You thought you were going to be the Attorney General of the United States, or you thought you were going to be the Secretary of State, or you thought any of these jobs that these top three people
surrogates.
Thought of, you know, the guy from Bridgegate, the governor of New Jersey, Newt, and what's his face from
Rudy Giuliani.
The Mask. Yeah.
The Mask.
The Mask, Rudy Giuliani. He looks a little like Jim, whatever his name is, in The Mask.
Carrie, he
yeah,
does.
Yeah. So you're just totally ticked off. And you think, well, you want to hold the base. You got that 40%. You're going to keep that 40%. You do it. You yell and you scream. And, repetition does not make it right.
I think that this is emblematic of the entire campaign and that these surrogates can't be relied upon to stay on any sort of message. I'm sure Kellyanne Conway and the others wring their hands when they see something like this, and they say, we can't get our own candidate in a debate to hammer home the things we want to hammer home and is undisciplined. And then we have somebody who ostensibly is a disciplined politician who can't stay away from something like this that causes more trouble. I think this is a problem. I mean, you have it's off the rails in many ways.
See, I think these are all men, Trump and his surrogates in question here, who see themselves as big successes with women. They have multiple wives. They've had very successful love
lives.
Wait,
if you have multiple wives, you're a success with women?
I'm talking about what I think is their own self-perception.
You think they think if they failed at three marriages that they're...
They don't think they failed. They think that they always had beautiful women. Donald Trump doesn't think he's a failure, Alan. He thinks, look at my hot wife, and she's the third of them. I've had a whole bunch of models. So I think they see themselves as big successes with women, and women will listen to them if they just speak the right words.
So you think this is on message then?
I think it's on message for them.
See, I think that the campaign people are saying, my God, what are you doing?
Those two things don't conflict, Ray. I do think Kellyanne Conway must be ripping out her scraggly blonde hair over this.
That's very nice.
That's what,
really?
Well,
really?
Ray would say, that isn't nice. That's sexist.
Do I have to be nice?
Nobody said you had to be nice.
She's a surrogate who knows supposedly more about TV than anybody else. And do you ever see, her hair, that when you shoot from the back, it's all like a rat's nest in the back, and she looks drawn? I think that this campaign is killing
her. Okay, now, if a man said that, though, we can't say that.
Well, I was saying the same thing to her on the media project.
Listen, geez, you're all jumping all over me like I'm some kind of sexist. I think that this campaign is like Dorian Gray. Her looks are a sign of how badly it's going. She looked much better at the beginning. Draining away her health.
To Ray's point, we say this about the president. My God, look at how he's aged over 8 years.
That's a good point.
At the end of the campaign, we look at her and we say, wow, this is obviously
yeah.
This is a woman who's not getting 8 hours of sleep every night.
Before and after of each show. I think Joe will show some age. Oh, there's four more gray hairs. Got done with another panel.
Dare I say this, but I'll be honest with you. I find Kellyanne Conway to be somewhat attractive.
Oh, God, I'm not going here. This is not.
Check, please.
That's not what I want to do.
I think
the appearance of the surrogates is something that the Trump campaign has thought about. There's a reason that they're all slender, mostly blonde women, always in sleeveless dresses. I think that that's purposeful and therefore subject to criticism and comment.
Okay, so then you can also criticize what Hillary wears in the debate. Chairman Mao pantsuit or whatever.
She's totally criticized all the time. Do you remember when she appeared in one of the primary debates and she had a gold top on?
But no, I'm saying you, Rosemary, who has now criticized the Republican consultants. Yeah.
Well,
it's okay for Rosemary.
Comment, not criticism. I think actually Hillary looks great in the pantsuits, you know, red, white, and blue that she chose. And she's claimed it as her own. I think that's just fine.
Check,
okay.
Please.
All right.
To the point, though, of let's just go back to Kellyanne Conway for a moment, which is a little bit off of our the women
Kelly
problem
thing.
Yeah, the women issue with the GOP. But with Kellyanne Conway, this is a woman whose life was polling, right? Her background is in polling and in working in that aspect of campaign.
Not polling per se, but polling of women's issues.
Yes.
Kellyanne's hiring is part of an attempt to appeal to women. Look, I have the first Republican woman campaign manager. That was a point in his campaign. She's married, however, to a lawyer who worked for Paula Jones. So the sexual predator thing is also something that she's familiar with.
So does this ultimately, looking at the poll numbers, which are again all over the place? I mean, the latest Fox poll has between 3 or 4 points. There was the AP poll is four.
The AP poll is 14 points up for Hillary Clinton's way strange.
Not true.
And then even CNN has thrown some states that were leaning Democratic into the toss-up realm, Nevada being one of those states.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's unfair. They were not leaning. They are Republican states who seem to be going Democratic, and now they're recalculating whether that is true.
It's just toss-up.
Yeah, who
knows what to believe? I mean, yesterday on the Situation Room, I'm in the kitchen getting dinner ready, and Wolf Blitzer has breaking news. Trump has cut Hillary Clinton's lead in half. It's down to 3 points, and then endless hours of analysis.
Yep.
And then today it's different. An hour before that, it was Hillary up by 7, and then breaking news, it's 3. We don't know what's going
to
happen.
I do have to say that I was listening to Alan talk to Brad Hayes yesterday on the Congressional Corner, and I thought he made an excellent point, which is in these waning days of the campaign, I'll use that term again, that in the last 2 weeks, it is historically unprecedented to have the polls move that much. Even if you're going to say that there's a tightening, sure, but to have it move even below the margin of error would be very difficult to believe.
So what does that tell you? Are the polls wrong, or has the paradigm, or paradigm if you prefer, has the paradigm changed so much, viz. Brexit and Trump's primary win?
Right.
Or are the polls just out to lunch?
Love you, Ray. Paradigm and viz, those are two great words. And I want to say that because they are changing and they're in such flux, one knows somebody's going to be wrong. One of the pollsters or some of those pollsters are going to be wrong because they're just wrong. Some of them say 3 points. Some of them say 11 points.
The pollsters themselves will say it's not about being right or wrong. It's about kind of measuring a certain place at a certain time.
Yeah, but,
and that it's much more important to look at the trend. And if you look at the trend of the polls, Hillary Clinton has been ahead by large or small margins in various places since the beginning of this campaign. And that the best way to analyze it is say she's headed for a win, excluding some sort of cataclysmic event, and it would have to be truly huge at this point in the last 2 weeks.
Well, I have real issues with that reasoning, and I think it leads to A, overconfidence, B, there is the 40% who or so who are for Trump are not your usual intellectual people who are, out there yelling on the news media and the newspapers and this stuff. So I don't know what's going to happen when people actually show up at the polls. I don't.
Well, and I mean, listen to yourself, Alan. 40% will stay with Trump. So who wins?
No,
Hillary Clinton.
Well, it depends. It depends. It depends how many people are in the middle who say, you know, I don't want any immigrants in the country, and I don't want any this or that. Look, we see it. We saw it in Brexit. We saw it in France. We see it in Le Pen's incredible. We saw that Angela Merkel's party had taken great blows to the chest.
You'd have to see an 11% change in people's position for Trump to win under that scenario. And nowhere, no poll, no anecdotal kind of gathering of evidence indicates that that percentage of undecided voters.
Well, let me just say, I hope you're right.
I mean, even the polls that are close, the people who are defending those polls still will say that the chances of an electoral college victory are very slim.
You know what?
For Trump.
Yes. You know what I really love? I love the fact that the Rasmussen poll, which I have had big doubts about all along, and say, whenever all the others are for all the other polls in the New York Times, you know, are showing Clinton, they've had Trump ahead by 2 points, two points, and then now they have her ahead by 1 point. Yeah. I think they're thinking it's getting close, so we have to save our reputations.
All right. Speaking of our reputations, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this short news break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Rosemary Armeo make up the group this morning. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. An email address where we get letters just like these.
Like these. Okay, so we have heard from Elias that there are over 20 polling groups testing the race. When one poll announces the latest number, it cannot be looked at in a vacuum. You need to look at the compilation of all polls. Thank you very much. And that's what the New York Times. And Larry, who always knows how to get his letter read, because he always puts in the
same thing. Alan is right.
Alan is always correct. You all talk about the new poll or that new poll and seem to wonder what the reality is, but never discuss Nate Silver's Flight 538, which very scientifically plots all the polling data to get some accurate trends.
I think we talked about that yesterday, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yes. We always talk.
We do, unless, of course, he gets it wrong. And that'll be interesting, and only one day we'll show that, right?
He was famously wrong about Trump getting the nomination, for example.
Right. So was I. Didn't seem possible. And then Barry wants us to know about Kellyanne Conway. If Rosemary wants to attack Kellyanne, fine, but dissing her appearance is below what the Roundtable should be doing.
Oh, baloney. Kellyanne is all about appearances and the way she speaks, and I am fascinated by her. There will be studies
on her. Were you dissing her appearance, by the way? I don't know. Yeah, I was.
She certainly was.
It's a failing.
Right, scraggly isn't a positive word? Or, no, just checking.
No. The rat's nest in the back, and she knows about appearances.
Although
it's a failing.
I said that I found her strangely attractive.
You did. But you found Phyllis Diller attractive.
I did not.
No?
Okay.
I did.
Well.
Okay. And
in fact, I was fanged for
okay,
a number of
years. All right.
Okay,
you know, I'll leave. Yeah, that's it.
Michael says, I don't know if you will fall into the email rabbit hole this AM, but when you are talking hacked emails by Mr. Assange, I think it is important to note that he has hacked into the NSA and the DNC, but not Hillary's private email server. Maybe when she wins, she can show everybody else how email security is done. That's Michael.
That's all right.
That's actually an interesting point, though.
Okay. And Brian says, Alan's comments on polls. Alan, you were exactly right.
Right.
What is it you said? I don't remember him saying anything about polls except we don't know what's going to happen.
Regarding the poll number showing Hillary up by 1 point, the point that Rasmussen has now changed.
Oh,
I watched that, by the way, in the New York Post years ago when they had Al D'Amato beating Chuck Schumer, Al D'Amato beating Chuck Schumer. But just before, whoom, the lines reversed because many political commentators are now backtracking a bit because they see the writing on the wall and are trying to save their reputations. What say you, panel, said Miguel.
About what?
I'm about to read it to you.
Well, I thought that was the last one. Who said that about many?
No, this is the next letter. What say you, panel, is the subject line, all right? Yeah. Good morning, panel. Good
morning.
You might have read by now that Utah Republican House Republican Jason Chaffetz announced last night that he will be voting for Trump after all, this after he made the rounds to seemingly every cable network and papers in a single night to renounce him. Chaffetz said he couldn't in good conscience endorse this person for president. Doesn't voting for endorse? What does the panel think in store for these so-called not defend or endorse but will vote for Trump politicians after the election? It's an interesting letter.
He is such a...
They're all between the rock and the hard place. They don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. They're looking at what their pollsters and their campaign managers are telling them. And as somebody wrote, they're going down the rabbit hole.
They have no principles. They have no strength of character. I think moderate Republicans, Paul Ryan and Jason from Utah, are going to have taken a terrible credibility hit in this whole matter with Trump.
I agree with Rosemary, says Allison in Carmel, that Kellyanne should take more care with her appearance. It's a matter of professionalism.
Yep.
Nice to hear from Carmel, by the way.
Yeah.
Down on our Mount Kisco transmitter. Hello, Carmel.
And speaking of polls, the latest ones show Zephyr Teachout, who's been endorsed by Bernie and Obama, has pulled ahead slightly.
Yeah, a couple of points.
John Faso.
Well,
yeah, it's still within the margin of error, but it's the first time she was ahead.
On that race, on the 19th congressional district, I have to say, I think it's basically by an edge a Republican district, but it's just unfortunate for John that this is. And I'm not, I'm certainly not a Republican. But it's unfortunate for him that he comes into this in a year where Hillary is leading the ticket. And
yeah.
There's going to be this huge turnout of Democrats.
And he's going up against a dynamic and unusual rival who has a lot of high-level support. It's a very interesting race.
It is. And Peter says, I'm scared. Wasn't Dewey certain to defeat Truman? Well, all of us have remembered polling was literally in its infancy at the time. It's true, that wonderful picture of Truman holding up the paper and imitating H.V. Kaltenbrunner, who would go down in history, really, for having been, sort of a conservative when he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But by the way, Truman was doing something that you would not pass PC muster now. He was imitating H.V. Kaltenbrunner's stutter when he made fun of him. So anyway,
it's always nice to have a history lesson.
Well, some of us remember our history because we're a little bit older.
Right.
We were there. Mm-hmm. Okay, 1948, what? Was I 7 years old? Hillary would never make such a comment as you. Hillary would never make such a comment as yours about Kellyanne Conway. Apology needed. Apologize right now.
I'm not apologizing. And, of course, Hillary wouldn't make a statement like that. She's a candidate, not a professor making comments on a radio program.
Well, Lou says, I agree with Alan. That's the subject line.
Boy. Everybody's on to the game now.
Yeah. Yes, the polls were...
But it still works, keep going.
Exactly.
I like it. Yeah, yes, the polls look good for Clinton, but I worry about silent Trump voters. I also worry that complacency will set in and keep people at home on November 8th.
Yeah,
exactly. It is dangerous for anyone to take the polling projections for granted. Looking forward to seeing you all at the Linda on November 9th. Thanks.
Oh.
Now, how are you and Joe going to do that if you're up till midnight doing election coverage here and then you're going to get up and go right over to the Linda?
We'll get hauled in by our eyeballs. That's the way it's done.
That's crazy talk.
Well, we sleep here in town.
Yeah.
So we don't have to go back to our respective homes, which are far away.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be so keyed up by the election and so excited to talk about it, it's a no-brainer.
Okay.
You're going to be asleep by 10:30.
No way.
No,
I'll tell you
why you're not. You may be asleep in the terms of the presidential part of it, but you will not be asleep by the Senate. The Senate races are going to be very close.
That's interesting.
And this is for control of the United States Senate.
Yeah, and we will all be here. The entire newsroom will be here.
Yeah.
Scarfing down pizza and getting
lots
it done.
Lots of pizza.
Good wings.
And here come the 9 pounds.
I love election nights in newsrooms.
And here come the 9 pounds again.
Well,
Bill says, our old friend Bill Vannevar says, hi, panel. I appreciate the urgency of the impending elections, but I wish you would at least address other urgent situations like the pipeline protests at Standing Rock or the genocide in West Papua New Guinea. Thanks and love the roundtable. That's from our friend Bill.
Yeah, I can't say about New Guinea, but we certainly have covered the pipeline and we'll continue to.
I can't wait till the election is over, though. Yeah, I mean, enough. This has been going on since the primaries, and it's tiresome.
I personally
find it tiresome.
I don't disagree with you, Ray.
Okay.
I don't disagree with you.
And Joe says, poll data. With neither major candidate taking a stance on kielbasa or pierogi, how can anyone claim to know what the polls say?
See, the subject heading, though, is spelled poll, P-O-L-E.
That's unacceptable.
That's hilarity. That's clever.
Maybe not work on the radio, but it's great.
Well, if you spell it out.
You could have made it work.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Definitely.
Okay, and Hank says, Kellyanne, I think she is trying not to be Trump's first choice. Anybody get that?
I think regarding her appearance. I believe that is.
Oh, yeah, like I wouldn't choose her. She wouldn't be my first choice. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, me touch her? No, she wouldn't be my first choice. That's funny.
Okay, and then Assange from Josh.
Just to correct, I like that we're just explaining the jokes this morning.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. I know, I'm a facilitator.
Thanks, Ray.
You really may be the smartest among us. So we all know.
No, I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah. Okay, it is clear. Josh says, just a correction on a letter you received. Assange WikiLeaks doesn't hack anything. They receive info from anonymous sources, verify the data, and then publish it. Thanks, Josh. And we know that they verify it how?
Publish it and wait for people to complain.
Okay. And let's see here. Oh, John says, the reason why every voter is holding their nose as they go to the election booth, had this information, which many of us, like me, knew was out there, surfaced early in the campaign, I'm sure Bernie would have done far better in the South and not had to make up a huge gap, early gap in
what
delegates.
Information?
Well, what they did, what Josh did, is John did, is he broke a rule.
Link?
He sent us a link.
All right.
I'm not going to the link, but it's against the rules to send us links.
But it's about the pay-to-play, the alleged pay-to-play at the State Department. That's what he was referring to.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
again,
it is interesting that there's still some Bernieites out
not
there.
Not a joke, but thank you for explaining.
It's interesting that there's still some Bernieites out there who say, if, then, what, you know, as you know, I voted for Bernie. But, you know, at some point, you know, you got to make up your mind. And what we're finding is that the third party candidates, as you get closer to the election, are beginning to disassemble. They're beginning to lose voters.
The third party, they're down to like 8% total between the two of the major alternative parties. I think Michael Moore, the documentary,
is
a very eloquent Bernie supporter. He's now going to vote for Hillary. He's enthusiastically going to vote for her. And he's saying to the Bernie people, with her, we can work. We can get back together and we can advance our agenda. And that's pretty smart.
Can I talk about his looks?
You sure can. What is, you know,
I don't know what's going on there.
And he likes to be in the movies. Yeah.
I don't know.
He's
unhealthy.
Michael Moore. Yeah.
Unhealthy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a big
fan. I worry about him.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan.
We're going to take a break.
Okay.
And we'll be.
Lots more letters.
We'll get to the letters. We'll talk about all of this when we come back after this short break.
Support comes from Ever-Present of Troy, New York, helping to secure family memories across generations. A local service scanning slides, photos, and converting home movies to DVDs. Everpresent.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. Planned Parenthood Health Centers, offering health services and education, including birth control, family planning, LGBT services, and more. Planned Parenthood Mohawk Hudson, PlanOnIt.org. And Capital CarShare, a car-sharing network offering a fleet of eco-friendly vehicles for neighborhood transportation. 24-hour reservations available online. CapitalCarShare.org for donations and information.
Thank you.
Eddie Harris, you know.
Did you know that was Eddie Harris? Yeah, wow, I know. Amazing.
I knew it when Ray said that's Eddie Harris, you know.
That's great. Boy, you're so upped on the jazz. That's incredible.
Good job. Nice to have you here.
Well, only 9 minutes to go with the show, right?
No, we got another 40. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you in for it?
Yeah, just give me another martini and we're good to go. Waiter.
All right, let's go on to some other topics. I do want. There was an article that I posted, and you can just or that I sent along as a possibility when we were talking about Megyn Kelly about this new Fox era, and we spoke a little bit about this yesterday about the divisions within Fox and in this post Roger Ailes era, and if the independence that we saw with Megyn Kelly two nights ago is indicative of both Bill O'Reilly and Megyn Kelly, who are at the end of the contract of their contracts, and what that means for Fox, and will it be changing?
Yeah, Alan had more information. We talked a little bit about this when we taped the Media Project today, that Rupert Murdoch has come out in support of Megyn Kelly, whose contract is up, and he wants to re-up her.
Yeah.
Is that okay if I say that verb, re-up? You've been checking my verbs today for sexual content, unintended sexual content.
I didn't even get that.
Good. Okay.
You see what she meant was.
I got what she meant. I got it right away.
Yeah. So that's interesting that you have Megyn Kelly, who is anti-Trump, I guess. I mean, she's not rabidly pro-Trump in the way that Hannity is. And then there's O'Reilly, who's
his own force. Well, maybe
personal,
too, right?
Yeah, it's definitely personal, too. So are all of them going to stay? Will one, some leave? Megyn Kelly could go to any network she wanted at this point.
Should we care what happens with Fox or CNN or MSNBC? Does it matter?
I think there's a realignment of networks coming, and that's interesting to watch. And yes, that has impact on our lives as American consumers of news. Mm-hmm. CNN, for the first time in like 15 years, has actually gone ahead of Fox News in viewership. That's interesting. And will Fox now become less far right? And will there be a new Trump network that goes further to the right than them so that Fox is centrist? That would be interesting.
Well, Fox is never going to be centrist, but be more centrist. By the way, Rosemary, you're getting a lot of negative mail.
Oh, boy.
Oh, that always hurts me so. Yeah,
I know. So
it only encourages her.
I love the letter. Like, we get half the letters. I love when Rosemary speaks her mind. Tell Rosemary to stop speaking her mind.
Yeah, well.
Okay. Paul says, I'm a big Hillary supporter, but your comments about Kellyanne are as bad as Trump. No class. Underline capital letters.
You know, it's not true. Kellyanne is an incredibly interesting person to watch and to comment on. There are going to be books written about her, and you can bet they're going to talk about her looks, her changing attitude towards him, the way she defends the indefensible. She is an amazing figure. Sorry, I don't apologize for it.
And Rosemary, I personally, I want you to take this in the right way. Love you. And I'm so glad you're here.
Here comes the hammer.
I'm going, yes.
No, because this letter writer who wrote mistakenly to mail, you give the address.
Roundtable
at WAMC.org.
You don't write
to
mail. Mail means Selma gets it. She sends it on.
Oh, Selma does the mail?
Well, Selma does the mail sometimes, and so does...
Selma's a female.
And I thought she was retired.
Well, no.
Really? You too? Hey, too Brute?
Okay, but here is what really killed me about Paul's letter. I'd rethink my past support of WMC if your commentator is not called out on this. Paul.
Listen.
You know, nobody threatens the Chartok twins.
Listen.
Yeah. What?
The rule about physical appearance is that you don't comment on it if it's women, because we never do about men. But my view, and I have followed this process since I began as a journalist, is that we as people care about the appearances of others. And the inequality comes when you don't comment about men's look. But I have been a commentator on both. I talk about the way men look, and I talk about the way women look. And I think that it is important to their overall effectiveness as communicators.
And I think when you talk about that effectiveness and the point that these are the surrogates, these are the people out in the campaign, and in this case, the chief, Hope Hicks, is gone. We don't see her anymore at all.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. So Kellyanne Conway is the person who is front and center. And so I think to I mean, obviously, it's not the only thing we talk about, but to put it into the equation, right. I think it's fair game.
Well, you know, that's so. Right, and there are different opinions. I don't know if I've mentioned this yet, but I find her strangely attractive.
We have one letter from somebody who just wrote.
Apologize for that.
Who just wrote, ew.
Seconded.
Okay, so Bruce says, our Bruce, he's a volunteer here, says, what do you think of Trump's poll watching setup? DNC is going to court about it. In other words, there's a theory that by putting, you know, by Trump saying the election is rigged, right. And that we have to get our people to the polls, it might turn some people off from even voting.
It's an effort at voter suppression,
yes.
I think.
Well,
and
it
that's
could be.
Why the DNC is trying to make this a legal challenge. It's very frightening.
So do they do the challenge if Hillary wins?
No, you do it beforehand. They're doing it right now.
You're doing it as the voting goes on.
It doesn't matter who wins or not. It's not a matter of the outcome. It's a matter of who gets to have a say in the outcome.
I love early voting and did it yesterday at my local clerk.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. And in Massachusetts.
You don't want to wait until all the information is in?
No.
No?
Massachusetts is a good state.
It's a commonwealth.
State, Commonwealth, whatever.
Are we going to talk about the Supreme Court today?
I would love to.
That's an amazing story. We have to talk about the Supreme Court.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Talk about it.
thank you. Thank you, Rosemary.
Back yourselves up.
The question about the Supreme Court is, Ted Cruz yesterday said that there's precedent for keeping ninth Supreme Court seat empty. Now, we've heard this before. This has been going on during the whole Merrick Garland question as to when people weren't even meeting with him as to whether we needed a ninth member of the Supreme Court. Speaking to reporters after a campaign rally for a Republican U.S. Senate candidate in Colorado, Senator Ted Cruz said that there was precedent for a Supreme Court with fewer than nine justices, appearing to suggest that the blockade on nominee Merrick Garland could last past the election. You know, I think there will be plenty of time for debate on that issue, said Cruz. Whether he was asked whether a Republican-controlled Senate should hold votes on a President Hillary Clinton's nominees, there is certainly long historical precedent for a Supreme Court with fewer justices. I would note just recently that Justice Breyer observed that the vacancy is not impacting the ability of the court to do its job. That's a debate that we are going to have, and we talked about Justice Breyer's comments on this this week on the program.
Right? Nothing gets me more disgusted than that kind of Cruz comment. The Constitution of the United States says very specifically that the president shall nominate and that the Senate's going to say up or down.
But it doesn't say there have to be nine justices.
Exactly.
And
no.
In fact, the Senate, by not confirming, could actually do away with the entire Supreme Court. Just never, ever again, as it ages and goes away, never approve anybody else.
Can you imagine if it was a Republican in the same situation and had nominated a Clarence Thomas or one of those other people and was yelling, up or down, up or down, up or down, give him a vote. We've seen it before. So this is total something blash, expletive deleted hypocrisy.
But it may be hypocritical, but in fact, we've had constitutional and Supreme Court experts like Stephen Gottlieb who will say, yeah, there's no specific number.
There's an advantage to conservatives to have fewer because it's easier to get a majority of seven justices rather than a majority of nine. So you would limit activism.
I can't believe you guys are falling for Ted Cruz of all people.
We're not falling for
it. Yes, you are. You're
no,
falling
not.
For it.
Stop. Yeah. We're not advocating. There's a groundswell. Cruz followed John McCain saying no Republican is going to allow Hillary Clinton.
Well, there's the voice of reason.
It's not a matter of reason. It's a matter of strategy. We're looking at their strategy. And don't forget, Rachel Maddow pointed this out, very interesting, that the first comment that Trump made in the last debate about the Supreme Court was Ruth Bader Ginsburg said bad things about me. So if Republicans forced Ruth Bader Ginsburg to recuse herself from issues like, say, who should be the president of the United States, if it got to that point, if the polls are really wrong, then it would be not eight justices, but seven, and it would be a 4-3 Republican majority.
Now, it would go to Congress, right? It wouldn't go to the Supreme Court.
If it were an issue of procedure, as it was with Gore versus Bush. Gore versus Bush.
This is ridiculous. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the president did his job, and that those foolish people at the Republicans are saying, we're not going to do it. We don't care. We're going to stamp our feet. We're not going to do what the Constitution of the United States says. And that is what it says.
The Constitution actually is a little bit vague on the
Supreme Court.
No,
it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No, it says the president shall nominate, and the Senate shall either approve or not. Let me tell you.
The job of the Supreme Court is extremely ill-defined in the Constitution.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I've taught that course.
You know so much about history.
It
was actually John Marshall. It was actually the first Supreme Court that shaped the job of the Supreme Court as it has evolved. But it is not based in the Constitution.
All I can say is you're dead wrong. I've taught this course 1,000 years. I know what I'm talking about. You're wrong. It's just you're wrong. If the Republicans were in this spot, they'd be yelling vote up or down and all the rest of it. It's hypocritical. And Ted Cruz and John McCain are who you're looking at right now? Please, Rosemary.
She's not defending that.
Yes, she is.
No, she isn't.
Yes, she is.
Alan's just on a rant. Let's move on.
Hey, it's almost break time.
Yeah, let's take a break. I mean, that because this has been something that's been discussed by the entire nominating
committee.
Ted
Cruz is who we're looking at now?
No, but he's not the only voice.
It doesn't
matter.
He's not
the only voice.
He's
You're talking about the
right
Republican
now.
Senators.
Oh, please. He's out there right now setting up what they're going to do if Hillary is elected. And that's what this is all about, that the president will not be nominating, and we will not be voting for anybody at all in McCain line. It's disgusting, it's degenerate, and it is anti-American.
Holy cow. Well, I'm not going there. I can't argue with that. It's just
you certainly
you're going to call me wrong and rant
you,
and rave
you
about.
You certainly can.
Mitch McConnell has actually made it our policy for the past year, Alan. So whether
what?
I agree with it or
what?
Not, we,
so that's
we
okay?
have a it's did I ever say it was okay?
Wow. Well, you said Mitch McConnell has actually said.
I'm going to make this a 3-martini round table.
Yeah,
like Dorothy right. Parker.
I don't
kill
know why
the
this
mics.
Is
we got to go back.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. We hosed everybody down. Everything good? Everybody fine? All right, good.
I'm not putting up with that anymore. I heard from a relative just now who said Kellyanne Conway looks like Miss Piggy. I think that's degenerate.
A relative, you say?
Wow. I have no further comment about Kellyanne or the Supreme Court.
We'll let that hang up there.
Yeah, we'll hang that there. All right, let's talk about WikiLeaks. How about we do that?
All right.
Donations to foundation have vexed Clinton's top aides. Hacked emails released by WikiLeaks reveal power struggles and infighting in Mrs. Clinton's camp over her family's foundation. Is that a shock?
Boy, I read that. I'm anxious to hear what Ray has to say because I read that story looking for something that would say, oh, my God, this puts her away. This is shocking and bad. And actually, it makes Doug Band, who is an administrator who didn't get along with Chelsea, it makes him look bad. I don't see that there's anything in there horrible. Her aides, whose job it is to promote her presidential bid and to protect her, are worried that donations coming in and the way that people are trying to take advantage of the Clintons and use their influence will make her look bad. Should they not be worried about that?
No,
should they not be looking at?
They should, Rosemary, but
okay.
For change, let me argue with you.
I'm eager for another round here, yes.
No, but the fact is, I've been saying for a long time, I had a fight in the shul, of all things. Guy comes up to me, starts yelling about Hillary Clinton. Show me one thing that she's done when it's wrong. And I said to him, look, she shouldn't have taken the money.
There's a clown in the next studio. Everybody's...
Oh, my God, there's a clown in the studio.
Come on, clowns are good. Stop with the clown hate.
Okay, but she shouldn't have taken the money. Look, she has a problem with people who doubt her authenticity as a Democrat and the rest of it. I just think it's not a matter of illegality. I just don't think that they should have been doing what they were doing. That's all.
It's kind of unsavory to have to talk about all this leaked email. And I have a moral dilemma about this because this is surreptitiously gained email conversations. And yet some of the information is fascinating, like the New York Times quoting here, Hillary Clinton, another email showed it promised to attend a Clinton Foundation gathering in Morocco at the behest of its king, who had pledged $12 million to the charity. Her advisors worried that would look unseemly just as she was beginning her presidential campaign in earnest.
She did not go. Please add that. She did not go.
Bill went, right?
I don't know that. No, that's not in the script.
But, then, but Hillary got a lot of money for speeches.
And Yuma said she created this mess. She knows it.
She did get a lot of speeches. Yeah. In the world of corporate speeches, you get a lot of money for making speeches. They actively got money. They went and got money.
Rosemary, you know that Hillary does not have the appreciation of Obama from the voters and others who think, you know, when Saturday Night Live says you're going to vote for Trump, you're going to vote for the Republican. There's a little something there, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not attractive.
But we have made it a sin to be a centrist. You have to either be like a real progressive or you have to be like a
Donald Trump. I'm not talking about being a centrist. I'm talking about making bad decisions. That, in my mind, was a bad decision before the election.
WikiLeaks has now leaked the speeches. I've looked at them. Have you looked at them? Why the heck didn't she just leak them in the release them when Bernie Sanders first said to her in a debate, let's see those, and she goes, okay, I'll look into that. She should have just released them. There's nothing in there that makes me say, oh my gosh, that's really bad.
Right. Well, why didn't she tell people she had pneumonia?
Exactly. That is her real fatal flaw, is that she just wants to keep private things that don't have to be private. The head of Goldman Sachs did interviews on CNN this weekend. I understand. I don't watch it, but I read about it. And he said, look, you know, there's nothing in there. She didn't know anything. She was not in a position as an ex-Secretary of State to know things about the financial institutions that would be untoward for her to say. I don't remember anything she said. If it were I would have released them. So that's it. WikiLeaks is a whole lot of... you're right. We should be worried about how those emails were obtained, and not because they're stolen, but because it's likely the Russians who were stealing it.
Well, that's a separate
issue.
What
are they doing?
I'm just saying,
it is a separate issue.
I mean, the issue of at what point is it newsworthy? I mean, you go back to Ellsberg. I mean, the Pentagon Papers.
Right.
And so, at what point does that newsworthiness trump the fact that this was gained in an unsavory way?
You know, I was thinking of this like 2 days ago. I was listening to a really interesting story on the BBC, and it was a channel on satellite radio, and it was like a BBC documentary, and they were doing it on WikiLeaks. And one of the things that struck me was that I remembered a conversation that you and I had, Rosemary, on this show about Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. And they put out the new Ghost Out of Watchmen. They put out the new book. And it wasn't a new book. It was actually an early draft that was rejected, turned around and said, rework this. And then it became To Kill a Mockingbird. And I remember us talking and saying, you know, if you just look at it in the context of, as a scholar, this is really interesting to see how
the evolution
and the process went. Mm-hmm. At some point, looking at these emails will be fascinating to see the process, right, and for historians to look at the campaign and for all of this to go. But this daily deluge, I don't know what it does. I don't know what it accomplishes, and it seems odd.
Over the course of time, you'll also be able to properly vet them and say, oh, yeah, well, these have not been changed in any way, and these are accurate, and that is what all the different...
I reject that idea, I think. There's no evidence that they've been changed in any way. The Democrats keep holding that out, Donna Brazile especially. Well, I have no evidence, you know, that it hasn't been changed.
No, I understand
that. Well, you don't
have
any evidence it has been either.
But over the course of time, in a historical context that Joe brings up, then that issue goes away. Right now, in real time, God, it's tough for the American voter and everybody else watching to go, oh, how do I filter all this stuff out?
They don't. And Rosemary, you of all people, the chair of the journalism department, the journalism program at UAlbany, every time we talk about whether or not reporters should use purloined material, that debate, you know.
I'm strongly in favor of using material as long as the journalists have not themselves done the purloining or encouraged others to do the purloining.
Yes.
That all material in the public interest should be examined.
Okay.
I think it would be a dereliction of duty not to.
Aren't you implicitly encouraging that if you use it?
No.
You're not implicitly saying I encourage you to purloin this material.
Okay, but Ray, let's look at it a different way. The classic definition is And Rosemary talked to her students about it. I did for years, which was somebody, a wife who has been rejected by a husband, goes to the authorities and leaks out his tax returns, which suggest that he's been cheating on his tax returns. He's an important guy in the town. Do you use the material or not? Of course you use the material. You don't care what her motive was, right?
Right. Okay. That is right. Daniel Ellsberg, who there was a break-in in his psychiatrist's office.
Sure.
And the papers were stolen from there. But Daniel Ellsberg was moved by this, I think now that's been pretty much proved, a high moral imperative to get that material out. And he wrote it. He was part of the group that created it. So was it really wrong for him? Am I really in a position to say, no, I'm not going to touch it because there was a break-in. You know, nope, not going to touch it. But in this case, the WikiLeaks one, the element that's different to me, and it is a separate issue because I would use that material, no question. But we ought to be looking at why are the Russians hacking and working with WikiLeaks on this? What are they trying to do in our election? I think that's disturbing.
Well, first, let's pin it on them conclusively.
I believe our intelligence agencies have done
that. So you believe the intelligence agencies when they say that, but not about yellow cake in Iraq?
I believed it at the time. I believed in it at the time, as did Hillary Clinton. They have been proved wrong historically.
Okay.
Well, I refer you all to this week's New Yorker, which has two cartoons on the front. Mm-hmm. One of them is Bill taking the oath. Hillary taking the oath. Bill holding the Bible, and the Supreme Court justice on the other side. And the lower one is Trump taking the oath. Putin standing in the
holding
middle.
The Bible. Yeah.
All right. Are we good on WikiLeaks? Anybody
we're good on WikiLeaks.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Then I will move on. As far as the other thing about that story is that you just don't, even looking at the headline today in the New York Times, it's basically said, well, yeah, they were concerned about the foundation. Well,
yep.
I mean, that's all obvious, right? I mean, you come in and you say, okay, we're this happened, we're concerned, and we're going to talk about it. I guess I don't get
where the smoking gun is. Well, it doesn't seem to be a smoking gun. It doesn't seem to be.
I mean,
that.
It's a diversion, I guess. And
well, the cattiness, too, is there.
Yeah, so the whole, Chelsea went to daddy again.
Well,
that's a gossip monger.
Well,
I mean,
that's fun. Is fun.
But it also goes to the thing that Rosemary raises with us a lot, which is the concept of false equivalency. Mm-hmm. So they put in all this stuff about, very damaging stuff about Trump. And then the Times and others feel, well, okay, we have to equal this. And then they say, Ray, I guess I understand what you're saying. It's not so important, but then they say we have to put the Clinton email and stuff on the same level.
If the Russians are in fact behind it, you knew they have plenty of stuff on Trump. So
yeah, why are we not?
So when is that coming?
Yeah.
That's not coming because they want Trump to be elected.
Yeah, well, won't come until after he gets elected. I mean, that's my point. If it in fact is Russia, they're saving that for some reason.
Oh, you know, you're such a smart guy, but in this case, you're just dead wrong. Oh,
I think the Russians have a lot of interest in eroding confidence in our electoral system, and that's what's happening. And Trump is helping that. They are promoting Trump. We don't know if our vote's really going to count in places like Illinois and Arizona.
Are they promoting Trump, though? Not publicly.
Well, by tearing down.
By tearing down.
If they're doing
that, promotes.
Come on. Yeah. Where are the WikiLeaks about Trump, as you just suggested?
Right. But if the Russians are doing it, then we can make
Well, the Russians are doing it. Our security people say so.
Well, I see.
All right, let's go to a couple letters, and then we will...
Boy, do we get letters.
We'll dismiss for today.
Good.
Okay, John says, the fact that Hillary spoke for a fee at what amounts to a Wall Street pep rally questions her commitment to financial reform. Release the transcripts if there is nothing to hide.
They're out. Sorry. She doesn't have to release them now. WikiLeaks had them.
Okay. Well, she should have done it.
She
point.
Should have, yes.
Steven says, good morning to all of you nice people. I think of Hillary's need to keep things to herself, which shouldn't be kept private, as something like the way that people don't signal their turns while driving as they hold the attitude that it's none of their business what I'm doing. It shows a basic contempt from the other guy. Do you signal in your car when you
always?
Yeah, me too.
Always. I use hand signals.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Inside the car?
One in particular.
I've got one for Alan right now.
I was going to say I'm used to that handshake. Yeah.
All right, minute left. Go ahead.
Okay. And Ozone Pete says, "Dear Roundtable Panel, we're terribly sorry if it's left to WikiLeaks to do the job that journalists should have been doing all along. Apologies, Pete from Tolland." And Linda says, "Rosemary, have you checked out Bridget Kelly's hair? I, for one, am thankful that this is the era of bad hair. It makes getting ready easier. Looking forward to seeing all of you the day after." And that's Linda. Okay. And then let's see here. Morocco and the Clintons. Hillary did not go to Morocco after the donation, but Bill and Chelsea did.
Yes. Yep.
Bill and Chelsea are private citizens. Sorry, not Secretary of State. No problem.
Please. Oh, please. Don't insult us with that question.
Well, the show's over.
Yes, the show is over. Yes, it is.
Oh, boy, I want to say something else.
Oh, no.
No, go.
Thanks to Alan and Ray and Rosemary. Are you coming back?
Actually, not tomorrow. I'll talk about that to you.
All right. Go. Thank you very much. Goodbye.